Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We look at and explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, mental relationships, disability, sales, and many other interesting topics. My name's Tom Tutal Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter, and I just returned last week from speaking at the Think and Grow Rich Summit in Del Mar, California, where I shared the stage with such amazing speakers as Jeffrey Gittimer, Greg Reed, author of 3 Feet from Gold, John DeLemme, John Assaraf, Sharon Lecter, co-author of the Rich Dad Poor Dad books, Don Reed, the executive director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, and numerous other amazing people as well. Oh, don't forget Jim Palmer. I love Jim Palmer. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since age 5. That's 44 years now, and in that time I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And despite those physical challenges, I always answer amazing when asked how I'm doing. Find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and tall, TALL.com. My guest today is Chris Hearn. Chris is the CEO and co-founder of Mercantile Capital Corporation, a nationwide commercial lending firm that specializes in providing smarter commercial property financing for business owners and entrepreneurs buying their commercial property. Chris has become well known for his advocacy on behalf of small business owners. As a small business owner himself, he has a unique perspective on the commercial lending industry, as well as a deep understanding of what it means to be a small business owner in America today. Some of his honors include Mercantile Capital Top 25 Twitter Small Business Experts to Follow, Top 100 Small Business Influence Champion, 2-time SBA Financial Services Champion of the Year, Top 20 Most Influential People in Small Business Lending, SBA Marketing Guru of the Year, and 3-time Inc. 500 honoree. His first book, The Entrepreneur's Secret to Creating Wealth, How the Smartest Business Owners Build Their Fortune, is an Amazon bestseller, cracking the top 3 in 3 different sales categories. He's appeared on Fox Business News 7 times, and he's been in such publications as the Wall Street Journal, Inc. Magazine, Newsweek, USA Today, Bloomberg Businessweek, Los Angeles Times, Forbes, and the New York Times. He's also the co-founder of Kennedy's All-American Barber Club, a franchise men's barbershop concept that offers the finest haircuts for men, the lost art of straight razor shaves, all within a membership-based, nostalgic, club-like atmosphere. Welcome to the show today, Chris. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So I was wondering, Chris, you already had a very successful career, and you have a lot on your plate already with Mercantile Capital Corporation. What prompted you to take the time, because I know there's a lot of time involved in writing a book, to write the book?
Well, it's something that I'd wanted to do for a long time. I've written a lot for national publications. I have a column on Huffington Post. I just had my first column on Forbes.com. But it's a whole lot different writing a 1,500-word or 700-word article versus writing a 70,000-word book. And it's just something that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. And, you know, it was kind of the culmination of a lot of the speeches and the panels and the TV appearances and everything I've done over the years. And I thought that perhaps this was a very effective way to get this information out into the marketplace, because I think it's really, really critical for America's entrepreneurs to have this information.
Exactly. And I was speaking with on the stage with Jeffrey Gittimer last week, and he talked about how writing articles is a great way to also write a book. And you've written enough articles that you were probably able to add new stuff as well as collaborate other great articles you've written in the past as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not only that, but I mean, I've had a corporate blog for about 6.5 years, so there was a lot of things that I could mine from to come up with the book. But to put it all in one succinct place, that's something I hadn't done, because you know we have limits if you're going to have something in the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, or what have you, or anything else for that matter. They're not going to quite give you the freedom that you have with writing a book.
Exactly, and those are some big names. So what is Mercantile Capital Corporation? Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, it's a company I started 10.5 years ago, and our goal is, quite simply, that we're trying to create wealth for American small business owners through the ownership of their commercial property. In other words, giving entrepreneurs a home for their business. When they have a brick-and-mortar business, we want to be the folks that try and educate them and obviously try to finance them and trying to help them do this to fulfill their dreams in the future with this type of smarter financing. So that's succinctly what we do. We've now closed the small business loans in 40 states, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, for almost $1.4 billion of total projects, and that's just one small business owner at a time. And it's very gratifying, the work that we do. We really enjoy it. We try not to be a all things to all people type of a lender, which unfortunately some of the too big to fail banks didn't have that philosophy, and I think that was partly what got them in a little bit of trouble. But we like to think that we're the best at what we do, and we keep our heads down, and we think we deliver a tremendous customer experience for something that can otherwise be fairly complicated, and is generally the largest purchase of any of our small business borrowers' lives.
Exactly, and in any economy at any time, small business owners are the ones that step out and risk their a lot, not just money, time, family, time with family, their life, their passion, and so they are always the driver of the next wave of business. And so, as you said, it's not only a business, but it's a business where you're making a positive difference. If you help finance a company, you're not only helping that business, you help the wife, the kids, the future generations, the employees, suppliers. And so what you do is crucial and probably, as you said, like one of the top 2-3 things of importance when people are looking to finance a business. Now, as you can imagine, at this Think and Grow Rich Summit last week with all those amazing speakers, none of us are participating in this great recession. How's Mercantile doing during this great recession?
Well, we were on the Inc. 500, 5000 list in 07, 08, 09. We had a little bit of a refocusing in 2009, and then 2010 was our record-setting year, so even better than our previous record year of 2007. Then we proceeded to beat that in 2011, and then in 2012 we absolutely drubbed it. We did about 143% above what we did in 2011, and so far this year, so far so good. We kind of refuse to participate in the recession. We like dealing with people who also mentally refuse to participate and who understand the notion, the adage that we've all heard, which is you want to buy when things are prices are low and sell when prices are high, and commercial property is no different. It's a phenomenal time for that to occur, as well as we're living through historic low interest rate times. So it's, you put those two variables together with what's normally a very smart strategy anyway to create wealth, and it's truly, we're living in probably a once in a generation time. So that's why I'm doing so many interviews and talking with so many folks out there, Tom, because I'm trying to get the message out, because I really want more people to take advantage of this before they kick themselves a couple years from now. So that's why we're doing this. But it's funny you brought up the Napoleon Hill event. Actually, I was going to be at that and couldn't work it out with my travel schedule. But I hear it was quite a good event, and Tony's actually a good friend of mine.
The amazing Tony Robleski. Wow.
Yep.
Love,
yep.
Tony. Yeah. Yep. It was a tremendous event. It was some of the most amazing people all in one place. And pretty well anybody in any kind of small business, entrepreneur. If they haven't heard of Napoleon Hill, then they better hurry because so many of their peers have heard of him. And so you're based in Florida, but you've closed loans in 37 states. By the way, I've met a number of people from Florida. One might have been a real estate agent. I'll go through my cards later. But you've closed loans in 37 states, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. How do you do that based in Florida?
Well, it's actually we're up to 40 states now. Probably going to have our 41st state tomorrow when we have another closing in Hawaii. So, believe it or not, Hawaii is about as far away from Florida as you can get. We have a couple of hours in Alaska, which people scratch their head about as well. I think it's simple, Tom. Is you know, just like so many things go through cycles, and you know, we've been through this industrialization of work, arguably the industrialization of higher education even. You know, I think we're somewhat getting back to our roots of being a country of innkeepers, shopkeepers, you know, small entrepreneurs, people that find a niche and try their best to dominate a niche. And in doing so, it's really if you do the right things and you articulate your vision and you do right by your customers and you deliver great customer experience, it's very easy to become a national expert at whatever it is that you do. And quite frankly, most of today's small business owners, they don't really have the time to do the traditional dog and pony show for their banker. I mean, what I tell my folks all the time is people will trust us when we demonstrate our competency over the phone, the fax, and the email, and that's exactly what we do. And so it's not, you know, in my eyes, I don't think it's unusual that in the last 10.5 years we've closed loans all over the country, even though we've never had a location outside of Florida. I realize that's kind of heresy. It's definitely going against the conventional wisdom in the banking world, but you know, that's how we viewed ourselves from day one. We weren't going to do what everybody else does in the industry, and it's worked out extremely well for us, as it usually does in any industry. And that's how we've done it. We demonstrate our tremendous competence every single day over the phone, the fax, and the email. And I don't think most business owners really care where you're based. If you're the national expert. Mm-hmm. And you know what you're doing, and you provide that specialized knowledge, and you provide a great experience, and on and on. I mean, that's what they want to deal with. I don't think, you know, again, though, that smacks right in the face of most bankers, whether they're a national banker, a regional banker, community banker, whatever. They always want to try, you know, for them, they want to try and get all of your banking relationship all in one place. You know, your lines of credit, your commercial mortgage, your business accounts, your checking accounts, you know, everything.
Your
family's account. They want to,
your grandparents'
account.
They
want to, exactly. They want to vertically integrate, and that doesn't always make the most sense to the customer. You know, we've all heard that adage, you know, about your keeping your eggs in different baskets as opposed to keeping them in one basket. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think most small business owners are understanding that as this specialization economy continues to evolve. They get it. It's no different than probably how they operate in their day-to-day lives. So I don't think it's as unusual as perhaps it was 10 or 15 years ago, but I still confound plenty of folks in our industry with it, absolutely.
I think Jeffrey Gittimer would love you because you talk so much exactly kind of the things he talks about. Because if you, as you say, if you are the expert, and in today's age, come on, 2013, you could do almost everything by phone, fax, and email if you can. I don't know what kind of business that is. And so as long as you are known as the expert, and another thing a number of people said that you just mentioned a few times as well, you pick a niche and you don't try and serve everybody. And if you just cater and specialize and serve that niche like crazy, economy, good or bad, you're always going to have those customers. And rather than, as you said, trying to be all things, I don't know if you said it that way, but trying to be all things to all people, you have found a niche and you focus on that niche. And as you said, you are expert in everything you do, phone, email, fax, in person. And when you do that, you really don't have to look for leads. Generally, you have to sort through leads to see who you'll do business with, right?
Yeah, yeah, no question. Yeah, we don't generally, let me put it this way. We don't do a whole lot of outbound calling in our business. We simply react to inbound calls. We attract people to us based on, the knowledge they have about us, various advertising and marketing things that we do, but also, quite frankly, how we position ourselves. And, again, I think that's really shocking to a lot of the people that we compete against. And I think there's a lot that people could learn from us in terms of our business strategy, our go-to-market business strategy. But, I think if you're chasing people, I don't think that's a real effective way. I think it's much, much better to be the one being chased.
Exactly. And again, I think Jeffrey Gittimer was, he either influenced you or you influenced him, but these two would love each other because this is exactly the kind of message that he's talking about as well. Being a fan of Napoleon Hill, you know, of the secret in the book, Think and Grow Rich, he refers to so often. And of course, anytime there's a secret, you want to know the secret. And your book has the entrepreneur's secret to creating wealth. So I got to know the secret, because even with Think and Grow Rich, as you know, not everyone reads the secret. They might read it numerous times. So tell us the secret, because Napoleon Hill never told us the secret in his book.
Well, you know, there's a number of things, just like with Napoleon Hill's book, of course. There's two primary themes, I guess, of my book, which would be obviously just like people move out of apartments into homes at some point in their life cycle, it makes sense if you have a brick and mortar business to have a home for your business. It's one of the easiest ways to create wealth for you as a small business owner, that you generally don't have to do anything to the day-to-day operations of the business. You don't have to change anything. It's frankly paying yourself the rent as opposed to paying your landlord's mortgage and getting him or her wealthy. And so that's secret number one. The second big secret is I actually talk about in the book how to do this. And really, I go into it. It's been likened to a blueprint on exactly how to do this. And I do believe that this is a critical, critical purchase in a business owner's life. Like I said before, it's probably the largest purchase they're ever going to make. And so in that case, I think you ought to make sure you do it correctly. And so, I have a whole chapter on how to determine, the right commercial real estate for you. You know, if you should buy a little bit more than what you currently have, what to do with that excess square footage, all the different variables to look at, how to get organized to present your best foot forward when you go to get financing, because about 90% of commercial property is actually financed. It's not paid for in cash. And I talk about how to choose the right team members. Of course, there's a whole chapter on a commercial real estate broker or agent and how that can be so valuable for you and really save you a lot of time and headache. I also talk about how to pick, in another chapter, I talk about how to pick the right commercial lender. And in both cases, I give 8 questions to ask that need to be answered before you decide on one. And then I get into, in another chapter, all about the best all the options to small businesses out there in terms of loans to finance the property. And last but not least, I talk a whole chapter about what I call the best kept secret in commercial financing, which is a particular loan program that we just so happen to be the nation's experts at, and we discuss exactly the pros and cons of all these things. And so all that's covered in the book, and obviously one of Napoleon Hill's central ideas. I'm not sure how we're going off on Napoleon Hill here, Tom, but that's fine because I think I present all of this with accurate thinking, which is one of my favorite pieces of his book that a lot of people still just have such a tough time with, but happens to be one of the things that I'm most fond of, because I just think sometimes you know, maybe it's my Midwestern upbringing, but I think, you know, the truth is the truth, and you should present it as such, and if the truth hurts a little bit, so be it, but at least you're dealing with things in an accurate thinking sort of way.
You got it, and Chris, I wish I could remember, but one of the speakers spoke exactly to accurate thinking. Maybe Dave Stetch, who's in real estate, has also spoken at Harvard Business School, but he taught about accurate thinking and the boy know that. How do you know? When someone tells you something, how do you know? Boy, this is fun, Chris. We could go on forever. I was thinking of my friend Tim Chim. Tim Chim is in New York. He's a certified Napoleon Hill instructor. He'll be the co-author of my new upcoming book about adversity and defeat. And he's a refugee from Cambodia, and he has an Allstate agency. And he tells people proudly, kind of, that came to this country with nothing, and now I owe millions. But he owns his commercial building. He has three tenants upstairs. He's owned it for a long time. He has good equity in it. And so along with building his Allstate agency, he's able to own this piece of real estate. And this, you know, he pays rent somewhere. So why, as you said, why not pay it to himself? He has a great brick-and-mortar building, so his customers know where to go. He's a permanent brick-and-mortar resident of their city. And so that decision to purchase the building, along with him running an amazing Allstate agency that wins awards all the time, on stage all the time, has been a big decision in building an asset as well as building a business at the same time. So what you're saying is, you know, used by not only Tim Chim, but some really amazing people. As you said, turns your brick-and-mortar business into an asset, or I said it, but that's exactly what it does. And so, amazing. Now, why do you only offer commercial real estate financing for your clients? Because isn't residential safer? Or tell us why you only do that, the commercial real estate financing.
Well, other than my own homes that I've financed, I don't know anything about residential, and so I try to stay away from things I don't know much about. Yeah, if you wanted
it's
to
play... It's not something anti-residential. It's just something that
you really know. Exactly. I just think people should offer what they know about best and not try to fake it. In my other business, which is Kennedy's All American Barber Club, I get asked regularly, well, you know, because we're predominantly a membership-based upscale men's barbershop franchise, and people are fascinated with that idea, but invariably, especially the women who talk to me about it, they say, well, shouldn't this work for women as well? Why don't you come out with a woman's salon that offers monthly memberships and unlimited services and whatnot? And I said, I think that's a brilliant idea, and I'm sure it would work, but I'm a guy, and I'm trying to fulfill a need here first and foremost, and, you know, maybe 10 years from now, I'll get to Kathleen's All-American Beauty Salon or something, but if for the time being, I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing. Yeah, I try to stay in my comfort zone to some extent.
Exactly. You'll probably have ESPN on in this women's salon and with jerseys all over the place. It's not your niche, and so why bother trying it? And that's probably one of the most interesting things I've ever read in a radio bio is the All-American Barber Club. I've never been introduced to an All-American Barber Club person, and it sounds like an amazing idea. And I have one of my very, very good friends, Keith Rogers, a long time from Chicago. He loves straight razor shaves. He has gone numerous times to pay for them, get a nice one done, and so kind of a lost art. And so tell me a little bit about that, because that is, I can't read something like that without asking about it.
No, you're right. I get asked this question all the time. Where it comes from, because people think, you know, I've even had somebody interview me, and I think they called the interview, you know, banker, barber, candlestick maker, or something like that. I don't do candlestick making yet, but what I did do for many years, and still continue to do with my main business, Mercantile, is I've financed enough franchise concepts. I'm going on about 7 dozen different franchise concepts now, mostly food related or hospitality related. So, you know, I've done Dunkin' Donuts and Uno Chicago Grill and Perkins and Denny's and Jimmy John's, and, you know, just the list goes on and on and on. But I've also done a tremendous number of flagged hotels. So, you know, Courtyard Inns and Hampton Inns and Super 8s and Holiday Inn Expresses and Residence Inns and all these types of things. And so what in doing that so often over the years, I sort of fell in love with the franchise business model, this idea that you as a franchisor have a turnkey business system that you own the intellectual property of and the trademarks and copyrights and all sorts of things, but you're really concerning yourself with training, quality assurance, with marketing, things of that nature, and giving other people the right and the ability to buy the intellectual property from you and then go and operate this turnkey business system out in the field, wherever they may be, you know, geographically defined. And I think it's a fascinating concept, and sort of in the back of my mind, I wanted to become a franchisor. Well, long story short, guys are very loyal for the most part to whoever cuts their hair, and I'd been going to the same barber for about 8.5 years. When one day he made the mistake of mentioning this interesting concept that you know, had a membership to it, and if you walked in and you were a member, they'd give you a beer and you could get a straight razor shave and all this stuff. And I thought that sounded really great. I'd never even had a straight razor shave at that point in my whole life. And I guess on the next visit he was extremely late, and I decided to go looking for this place. And so I went and found it. I came in, learned a little bit about it, immediately they were able to squeeze me in, and I got my very first straight razor shave on the spot. And when I got out of the barber chair at the end, I immediately signed up for a membership, prepaid for the whole year, and I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And about 6 months later, I was coming back for my regular every 2 week haircut and shave at that point. And this time my barber started complaining a little bit about some of the lack of support that they were getting from corporate, from the franchisor. And rather than fall asleep in the barber chair like I normally would, my antenna went up and I started asking questions throughout the entire hour-long service. And by the end, I got out of the chair and immediately went to the proprietor and said, who do I need to speak with to see if they're willing to sell it to me? And so that started a bit of a lengthy negotiation. But the bottom line is I bought a very fledgling barbershop concept at the time, changed the name. It had 4 units at the time, changed the name to Kennedy's All-American Barber Club, upgraded all the services, actually renamed all the membership levels, started upgrading the amenities, the look and feel of the places, and began franchising it because I knew that this is something that was, whose time had kind of come and who fit the space in between the old school barbershop that's dying off because, you know, Vinny's been cutting hair for 55 years and he's 87 or something, okay? That happens all the time. Or the high-end feminine salons where a guy is like the only man in there and is a little bit uncomfortable and probably paying way too much, you know, $80, $90, $100 haircuts. Or the chop shops at the other extreme, which is, you know, you basically are in and out in 10 or 15 minutes and that's about what you pay and there's no frills and it's, you know, it's basically assembly line grooming.
Yeah.
And you have a different gal every time and, you know, you're reading 6-month-old Cosmo magazines in the waiting area. It's just not very pleasant. So I knew there was a space here, and I also knew that in America there's not much of a quote-unquote third place between work and home for the average guy. And when I say average guy, I really mean a gentleman. You know, I want to try and bring back more gentlemanly values. I mean, there was once a time in America where a barbershop was the place that guys went regularly to groom themselves. That's where they learned about, you know, the latest in news and politics. That's where they brought their sons so they could sort of bring them up as men. And I think it's, I think we've lost something there by not having that anymore. So we're trying to restart that, and that's where we're at now. So we've got 13 locations in 4 states. now, and we're probably in the year with 17 or 18 locations, and we're growing. You know, we've grown considerably at the barbershop level, the unit economics level over the you know, last 3 or 4 years since we started throughout the Great Recession. We don't have quite as many shops open as I would have liked by now, but I'm seeing a tremendous amount of interest in it again, and we're already kind of the largest upscale men's club that happens to do grooming already. So I think that's really exciting, and I'm having a good time, and it's very different from banking. So it's something else that keeps me interested, you know.
That is a powerful idea with a niche market with people that I know it's probably, you know, a pretty good niche market, because people love it, and it's unique. It must be fun as well. Are you doing anything in Canada?
No, not yet. I've had a few people kick the tires from Canada, but nothing's come to fruition yet. And obviously we are amenable to changing it to Kennedy's Barber Club as opposed to Kennedy's All American Barber Club, if that appeals to someone. We've had interest from England. We've had interest from the Middle East. The Middle East, I'm pretty sure we're going to drop the All American piece. You know, Australia, New Zealand, England, Canada, I think we're probably fine, but some of the other places we may have to drop the All American piece.
Yeah, exactly. Might have to do that for a few countries for sure. Now, Napoleon Hill, I love how we can always get back here. Now we're a little bit on common ground with Love Napoleon Hill. Principle number 4, Napoleon Hill Foundation, going the extra mile. There's a charity aspect to your book, because in reality, let's be honest, with your other two businesses, you didn't write the book to make money. You had enough money already. It's something you did as a service, maybe to help other people. And so you put a charity aspect to it. Tell us about that, because that's always exciting when somebody can learn something and benefit charity at the same time. That's a double whammy for people.
Absolutely. And if anybody's a budding author, I guess I'll be the bearer of bad news. There's not a whole lot of money to be made from writing books. Royalties are pretty slim. Having said that, you're absolutely right. I wanted to have a charitable component to this that would actually you know, be congruent with my life philosophy and what I'm trying to do, and that is I'm a huge supporter, huge advocate of entrepreneurship. I mean, I think that's the way that Western civilization has gotten to where it's at, and is through innovators and through entrepreneurs. And you know, if we're going to maintain that stature and actually grow it from here, then we have to be very supportive of the up-and-comers. And so what I thought I would do is say to people, and it's on the cover of the book, the back cover of the book, and there's a whole page in the book that explains this whole process. But when people buy multiple copies of my book, defined as two or more, all they have to do is send me a copy of their receipt, you know, their purchase. And what I do is I take all the net proceeds that I would have gotten from that particular sale, and I actually donate it to the Young Entrepreneur Foundation, which is a group that teaches today's high school students how to become tomorrow's innovators, tomorrow's entrepreneurs. And so I'm not sure, Tom, if I'm going to be around long enough to turn any of them into clients, but that's really not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to continue to, you know, not really give back. I don't like that idea of giving back, because it assumes that you took something. I like the idea of paying it forward. And so I want to pay it forward and try to make sure that we have plenty of young people who are going to become future entrepreneurs and continue to push the envelope and continue to innovate and push our economies forward and make sure that you know, we're doing the right things by them. I think culturally, we despite a lot of rhetoric, I'm not so sure that our cultures really understand what it's like to be an entrepreneur these days. And I want to make sure that we have more people that get it, because I think it's that valuable. It's that important.
Exactly, and with these Gen, whatever they are, Xers, Yers, whatever these young people are, I think I saw a statistic last week, 84% of them want to be entrepreneurs and business owners rather than being an employee. And so,
well, that's great. That's great. So I haven't seen that statistic. Yeah, but that's wonderful.
It's powerful. And then young entrepreneurs, one of the most common themes, Chris, people I interviewed is that I wish I had learned this when I was younger. Wish I had read Napoleon Hill. Wish I had learned about becoming an entrepreneur. Wish I had taken this program. And so when you can work with young people, as you said, we're a little bit old users to maybe they won't be customers of ours, but if you can change the life of one of these young, budding entrepreneurs, you change their spouse, their kids, their family, and, you know, you for generations to come. And so
right.
This is the biggest thing. So many people had to knock their head against a bunch of walls, finding the definite purpose and saying, oh, I wish I learned some of these things when I was in my teenage years. And that's exactly the audience you're helping, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I certainly hope that, you know, it pays dividends for us all, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, this is the age group or something that you're not doing to pay back. As you said, you're paying it forward. And this is kind of what today's economy is like. You talk about the thank you economy, and some of the other people are talking about the different economy, and it's a pay-it-forward economy where you do things to serve others. And as a result of that, in my books, it's God, but the universe looks after taking care of you, right?
Right, exactly.
And so this is your way to pay it forward and create a legacy, because when you change your life, you really create a legacy. And where can people buy the book? Is there a number of places they can get it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's in most offline bookstores. I've been fortunate enough to get a bunch of photos sent in to me from airport bookstores that some of my friends and fans have seen. You can certainly get it online at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, any of those types of places. Absolutely.
Amazing. Can you just give me a few minutes to comment about Thinking Grow Rich? How old were you when you read it? And do you remember who got you reading it? And how it did help you in your life and business career?
Sure. I think I would have been in my – I probably was in my mid-20s. I don't recall exactly who – got me to read it. I think I'd heard about it in a couple of other, you know, like audiobooks or, you know, self-help type things that I finally said, well, who is this? I guess I need to check that out. And so I got it. And, I haven't picked it up in a number of years, but I do remember a number of the points in there. And, you know, some of my favorites, as I've already said, I've accurate thinking is always a big deal. Definiteness of purpose. The masterminding concept is another one that I've gotten a lot out of over the years, and I've actually led my own mastermind groups and helped coach others in that. There's a lot to it, and I just find the process by which he did it, you know, going around and interviewing all these, you know, industry titans at the time. I find it fascinating. I know Sharon Lecter's got this, I guess, lost manuscript or something. I don't know what she's talking about.
I had my picture taken with the actual manuscript last week.
Oh, yeah?
Napoleon Hill's actual typewriter, and then he had it bound on Don Green, the executive director of the foundation, had it. I got my picture taken. That's what Sharon Lecter worked from. And this is
right.
What so many people talked about, was this book, Outwitting the Devil. Definitely.
Right, that's right. Outwitting the Devil. Yeah.
You've read that one?
No, I haven't read it yet, but that was, you know, when Tony put on this event, he actually reached out and wanted me to come out and either speak or lead a round table or something like that, and I just couldn't coordinate with my travel schedule. So I'm disappointed I missed it, but I'm sure it was a tremendous event, and he assured me he's going to get me some of the videos and whatnot so I can at least see what I missed.
Exactly. Next year, the second year is going to be in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, good.
I was excited to see Sharon Lecter. I had not met her as of yet. We've exchanged numerous emails and that. And so to meet Sharon Lecter and Greg Reed, between them, look at that, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 3 Feet from Gold, Outwitting the Devil, So amazing people. And you're helping, you must know this, of course you know this. When you're in a room full of entrepreneurs, isn't that a fun place to be in small business owners? Because most of them are possibility thinkers. They're fun. Their thought energy is just like bouncing off the walls. And so you've picked a really nice niche to work with, haven't you?
Right, exactly. Well, it's a niche that I enjoy. I mean, I like working with these folks. I can't stand dealing with big companies and, you know, decisions taking months upon months, decision by committee and things like that. I like to deal with the people that are in the trenches daily and, you know, have to meet a payroll like I do, and that's what I enjoy.
Exactly. People you can reach on the phone and people who are paying it forward and being of service to others. And when you do that, it's a lot of fun to deal with people like that. Anything coming up in the next few weeks or months, Chris, that people should look out for? And is there a particular website where it's best to find out about you?
Sure. They can go to 504experts.com. That's my main website, 504experts.com. If they want to get more details about the book, if they don't want to go to Amazon for it, they can go to theentrepreneurssecretbook.com. And I think you can even get like a free first chapter or something of the book there, and you can certainly order it there. You can learn more about my background. If you want to learn more about Kennedy's, you can go to kennedysbarberclub.com. kennedysbarberclub.com, no apostrophe on the S. You can certainly Google me, and you'll see all my social media connections, you know, Facebook and Twitter and my YouTube channels and Google Plus and LinkedIn and all sorts of stuff. We even have a pretty cool Pinterest page for Kennedy's, which I've heard from a lot of people. They're fascinated by some of the stuff we put on there. So you can find me a lot of different places. And, of course, you know, follow me on the Huffington Post. I try to write about once a month or so, post a column up there and just various things. My last one was about franchising. This next one I think is going to be about building a successful corporate culture, because that's something that I've always done with all my companies. So that's probably the next thing that you'll see from me. Yeah.
Amazing. I got to give a little shout out to our mutual friend Tony Wislutski. I had not met him until actually at the event, and what an amazing guy. I'm so grateful, thankful that he invited me to speak. Like, I got no product to sell, no book to sell. I'm just a short handicapped guy from Toronto with a positive attitude. And he got me on the stage. You know, now I can say I shared the stage with people that, like, really, really taught me. So what an amazing guy. I hope to see you at next year's event in Chicago. Obviously, with the mutual friends we hang around with, we're eventually going to meet sometime, because we probably attend a lot of the same events and know a lot of the same cool people. Thanks so much for your time today, Chris. I have the book. It is the actual very next one after The Keys to Positive Thinking by Napoleon Hill that I'm going to read. I kind of operate on a first-in, first-out system, which is kind of like accounting there on my book reading. And so although I got some amazing ones last week at the summit, yours got them in the mail before I got these ones home. So you're in the next lineup for my book reading, and I'm looking forward to it. Anything that has the word entrepreneurs and secret in it is something I definitely want to read. Thanks for your time, and have an amazing day, Chris.
You too, Tom. Thank you. Take care.